Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming. Yes, well, I did get the MBE, as Jill says, but whenever you're in Ireland, getting an MBE still means you have to keep your feet firmly on the ground. My employees were trying to think what it stood for one day, and they came up with Mighty Big Egypt, and then My Brilliant Employees. So I think the latter probably, well, actually both are probably accurate. So anyway, I'm delighted to be here today. As Jill said, I've been coming to Greenbelt now for, well, a good while. I'll not give away my age yet. And it's always lovely to get an opportunity to give something back to something that's given so much to you. So, and thank you for coming to hear my talk today. Hopefully it'll be of some use. I just wanted to try to talk a little bit today about, well, I'm going to introduce myself to you first of all, and then hopefully you guys can introduce yourself to me at the end if you want to. I wanted to tell you a little bit about the organisation that I work for at the moment, just to give some context to the idea of servant leadership as well. And then I just want to start talking maybe about some of the characteristics or principles that I think are important around servant leadership. So just a little bit about myself. As Jill said, I've been working in homelessness now for about 14 years. She said 12, but it's about 14 at this stage. I set off to London when I was 21 to go and work for the Dole plus a tenner a week in a voluntary capacity, much to my mother's dismay. And my nan's dismay, she wanted me to get a proper job, as she called it. From there, I went on and did a master's in social work and then very quickly moved into management roles. And about 3 years ago now, I became the chief executive of DePaul Ireland. So it's been a very, very steep learning curve for myself in terms of moving up the ladder into leadership. And I'm actually very, very interested in the concept of leadership. Whenever I was doing a master's in voluntary sector management, we talked a lot about management principles, you know, what you need to do to run an organisation, and basically managing an organisation. But for me, the leadership part of that was incredibly important in terms of how, like, we try to inspire. I'm going to put my glasses on so I can see my notes. How we try to inspire people, how we try to collectively work to the future to make a difference in the lives of people that we work with. And talking about servant leadership, it's a challenge that I put to myself as much as I do to anybody else in the room. It's not something that I would say I'm an expert in, and I certainly wouldn't at all say that I was a model example of servant leadership. But I am interested in it because I very clearly got involved in working with homeless people because I was interested in actually working with them. And now I find myself moving into a leadership role where I see them much less than I would want to, but I'm very, very aware of the fact that I'm still employed to work for them and on their behalf. So just wanted to introduce a little bit about DePaul Ireland. Jill's already said about DePaul International, and the DePaul Group was basically established in the late 80s in London, and it was at a time that the benefit legislations had changed and a number of young people, like the numbers of young people presenting on the streets had increased quite dramatically. And Cardinal Basil Hume at the time had noticed this, and he opened up one of the buildings within Westminster Cathedral and invited people indoors. But being the practical man he was, he knew that really wasn't sustainable. And so he asked a number of Vincentian organisations to come together. So the Society of St Vincent de Paul, the Daughters of Charity, and the Vincentian Fathers. And they all put a little bit of money into the pot. And from that, de Paul was born. And I should actually say that some of our colleagues from de Paul UK are here this weekend in the G Source. So if you wanted to know some more about the work that we're doing here in England, you could go along and talk to them. So, and DePaul UK is actually celebrating, or DePaul International, I suppose now, is celebrating its 21st year in operation. But in 2000, our group chief executive was seconded to Ireland to work and advise the Society of St Vincent de Paul around accommodation standards. And whilst he was there, two young people had died in the streets of Dublin of heroin overdoses. And the reason basically they died on the streets was because they couldn't get any access to accommodation at that point in time in the city. And just to give you a context, in Dublin at that stage, really, if you couldn't turn up at a hostel and produce evidence of not using drugs, i.e. a clean urine sample, or if you smelled of alcohol, or if you weren't prepared to be searched, patted down, your bags gone through, you quite possibly wouldn't get access to accommodation. So you found that really the people who most needed support were the people who were least likely to be able to access that support. So we were asked, would DePaul Ireland do something, or would DePaul at the stage do something about working with this group of people where there was an unmet need? And our group chief executive said, well, look, there's a number of other providers in Ireland. Why don't you put this service out to tender and see if somebody else comes forward rather than introducing another provider into the Irish scene? So it went out to tender, and embarrassingly, no organisation came forward to say that they would work with this active drug using group. So we were asked again, would we come? And of course, at that stage, it was very clear that we needed to come because there was an unmet need. So we've been working now in Ireland in the Republic of Ireland and in Northern Ireland for about 8 years. We run 12 specialist services now. We employ over 200 staff. Most of the services that we set up are the first of their kind. And we provide 300 bed spaces a night to people who are most in need and also work with people in the community. And I suppose one of the underlying principles for me at DePaul Ireland is that we work with people where they're at. So what I mean by that is we don't make it a prerequisite for people to have changed their lives before they come to our door. That seems hugely unreasonable and impractical whenever you find yourself in that situation. But what we want to do is to get people off the streets. And even if they've given up on hope in themselves, we'll keep hope alive for them. We'll work with them to make small changes in their life towards a positive future. And to introduce the context around servant leadership, I was working in Dublin around 2002, 2003, heading up a multidisciplinary team for the health board there, working across the city with people who were homeless. And that's how I first encountered DePaul. And there was something for me that was very different about the organisation. And I couldn't put my finger on it at the time, but I remember saying to somebody, someday I'm going to work for that organisation. And I suppose it was clear that despite the difficulties, they were working with the most challenging people in the city at that time. And I wouldn't really have known what to call it then, but for me now, I would call that Vincentian principles in action, or Vincentian values in action. I saw people being innovative, caring, fair, risk-taking, and importantly, I saw people working with a client group that others didn't believe you could work with. And I suppose at the heart of DePaul, the work is inspired by two figures in history, St. Vincent de Paul and St. Louise de Marillac. And I'd like to just tell you a little bit about both of them as characters, as I think that they are really good examples of servant leadership in action. Vincent and Louise lived some 400 years ago. He was a French priest, but also a social reformer. And it's important to say that I don't think Louise, although she wasn't a priest, she wasn't any less of a social reformer. They both came from very different backgrounds, but they formed an alliance and a partnership that was complementary and focused on making a difference in the lives of the poor. Vincent was ahead of his time, and he challenged religious people to not simply pray about the poor, but he encouraged them to do something about it. He told them that the streets were their cloisters at a time when people really did in religious communities work in a cloistered way. There's a great deal of Vincent's writing still available today, but one of the phrases that he used that most strikes me and which inspired the talk today is that the poor are our masters and our teachers. He goes on to tell us that they can be hard masters, but he is firm in his conviction that we must be prepared to learn from those we serve. I believe the thing that makes us as an organisation unique is that we still remain true to this, the teachings of Vincent. And this can be seen in what we do. I think you'll probably appreciate that a lot of charities have lost a sense of their roots because it's not considered today acceptable to celebrate a religious past. And I think to remember our religious past and remember our roots doesn't preclude us from working appropriately in an open and equal way today. So I couldn't possibly go into the full history of Vincent and Louise, and there's other much more qualified to do that than me. But what I want to do is draw out a few characteristics from them that I believe are important in recognising and understanding the Vincentian ethos, and indeed introducing us into the next bit of the talk around the concept of servant leadership. They were ahead of their time. They tried new things and they challenged existing principles. They were champions of justice and they saw charity as a way of achieving this. They both believed in action. Both were deeply religious and this was incredibly important to them, but practical care and support to the most vulnerable was also crucial. They were leaders, inspirational and motivational in different ways from each other. They recognised the need for teamwork and support. They wrote letters of support to each other and to those who were involved in doing the work across the country. They recognised the gifts of others and they let them thrive. They were human and not perfect, but they were committed and dedicated. Servant leadership has, of course, its roots in biblical teaching. We all know the saying, the first shall be last and the last shall be first. And we remember the story when Jesus washed his followers' feet, and there's many, many more examples. Vincent and Louise were most definitely taking their inspirational from their spiritual beliefs. Indeed, Vincent talked about seeing the face of Jesus in each and every person they encountered. He saw service of the poor as a manifestation of his vocation. He held true to the idea that the kingdom of heaven was theirs. Several authors have noticed the connection between servant leadership as a model and empowerment. What is servant leadership? Well, exemplary leaders use their power in the service of others and enable them to act by strengthening them and developing them into leaders. In modern times, Robert Greenleaf has been credited with coining the notion of servant leadership. And much of what I'll say today will draw on his writings, along with another author, James Autry, and a Vincentian priest, Father Murphy. And I've also spent some time talking to a woman called Alison Forrestal, who's an expert in Vincent. She's a real habit of bringing somebody who's been dead for 400 years alive today, and she works in Galway University. Greenleaf noted that a great leader is servant first, and that the conscious choice of wanting to serve first makes one then want to lead. The ultimate goal of servant leader is fulfilling others' needs. This is in contrast to the traditional style of leadership that emphasises power and control. In a sense, servant leaders assume the role of followers and serve others to promote empowerment, which thereby enables them to accomplish organisational goals. Greenleaf advocated that everything begins with the initiative of an individual. He believed that what would happen to our values, and ultimately therefore to the quality of our civilization in the future, would be shaped by the concept of individuals that are born of inspiration. He also felt that only a few might receive this insight and others will learn from them. He says that a leader needs more than just inspiration, they need courage. They need the courage to say, "I will go, come with me." In other words, they will take risks of failure along with success. So based on my learning from these authors that I've been talking about, I'd like to highlight 10 characteristics that I think are really important in terms of talking about servant leadership. Some of these are characteristics that can be learned, and I think some of them are characteristics that are more natural and inbuilt in particular individuals. I asked Alison last week, I talked to her about the list of characteristics that I'm going to talk about today, and I said to her, what do you think Vincent would think of them? And she said, well, not to put words in his mouth, but I think he'd be totally frightened of them. And she said that they were very empowering words and that Vincent hoped to empower people, but he was careful that people didn't get caught up in the role of leadership. She thought he might have felt that focusing on these characteristics could be dangerous if they weren't held in the right degree. So let us try to think then about applying the humility of Vincent whenever we talk about these characteristics. So the first one I want to talk about is calling. Some may think that leader-servant is a contradiction in terms, but it draws on Greenleaf's view that a person is servant first, as I've said. Having a sense of calling or vocation is incredibly important and one of the underlying characteristics of the servant leader. This suggests that leadership is a byproduct of service. Leadership can be given or taken away, but service, the servant nature, is the real person, not bestowed, not assumed, and not to be taken away. I find calling or vocation difficult to explain and understand. And if I think of my own experience, ever since childhood, I've been really interested in working with people that others might have considered less fortunate than myself. What is it that makes one sibling want to volunteer and not another? There was no sense of forcing or coercion from my parents. It was always something that I felt I wanted to do and instead with me. I'm not even sure why I wanted to work with homeless people other than maybe I understood something of the expression, "there for the grace of God, go I." What is it that makes one person called to do one thing and not another? I don't know, but I see calling or vocation as something that takes hold of you and you just can't help yourself but do something about it. Of course, people can feel vocational about all sorts of things in life, and the traditional the conditional view of vocation or calling has shifted. I see people within our own organisation who have what I can only describe as something you can't teach. So there's lots of things for the role that they need to do that we can teach in terms of form filling and assessment and all the rest of it. But how they engage with individuals is natural and inbuilt. It's something that can't be taught and can't be taken away. So I feel lucky to think that we've already got many servant leaders within DePaul Ireland. Vincent talks all the time to people about being a servant, no matter who you are or what you do. A servant leader is striving to make a positive impact on the life of others and society, not for their own gain. A servant leader is willing to sacrifice self-interest for the sake of others. This characteristic cannot be taught. So unless a person has a natural calling to serve, servant leadership is not likely to be a realistic or compatible style of leadership for them. Secondly, listening. This seems like a very obvious one in terms of leadership. But Greenleaf believed that only a natural servant automatically responds to any problem by listening first. This helps others see the leader as servant first. And I don't know about you, but it's not something that I always find the easiest thing to do. I'm quite impatient, which is obviously a characteristic I don't have to work on. And sometimes, you know, impatience can be good. I'm impatient for change. I'm impatient to see better outcomes for our service users, but sometimes I can actually be impatient with the people around me. It's not a fault to seek advice of others On the contrary, it's helpful and sometimes it's necessary to do so when a matter is important or when we're not well informed about it ourselves. Part of the reason we have people working together for a collective goal is nobody can achieve everything, anything on their own or everything on their own. People are employed for their expertise. So to be a leader servant, we need to be receptive and genuinely interested in the views and inputs of others. Sometimes openness and patience to others, whilst it may feel it takes longer and sometimes it can take longer, it can open you up to new ways of seeing the world and doing things differently and ultimately getting better results for your clients. More importantly, it encourages people to understand that they have an important role to play. By really listening, by being present with people and encouraging them to give their ideas, we will find they will be happier and more productive as they feel they are heard and valued. If we operate in this way and if we are truly leading a servant, people will instinctively understand that you want them to share their ideas. Thirdly, I want to talk about empathy. And again, this is a characteristic that comes naturally to some more than others, but it is pertinent to be a servant leader. Vincent was very affectionate and very empathetic. This was a really strong gift that he possessed as an individual. And it's hard to know if it had grown simply out of life experiences. He certainly had had many troubles in his early life, or if it was a natural gift to be able to walk in someone else's shoes, to view the world from their position. I've heard others say that you can't empathise unless you've experienced the situation yourself. And I've often questioned this in the work that we've done. So I've never been homeless myself. I've never slept rough. I've never lived in a hostel. I've never had to tell my story to umpteen people over and over again. But does this mean, as some might suggest, that I can only sympathise with people I work with? Personally, I don't agree with this concept. This in the context, sympathy can feel quite patronising to me. But sympathy accompanied with a genuine effort to really listen and understand, to try to walk in someone else's shoes without assuming that you really have it right, in my mind is a more developed skill of empathy. If we consider the fact that two people may experience the same situation and feel very differently about it, for me then empathy is about trying to understand the situation from the individual's perspective. Taking consideration of their personality, their circumstances, their skills, gifts and talents, and indeed their limitations. Empathy for me is not about imagining how you would feel in their situation. It's about trying to understand how they feel in their situation. Let's not forget the human imagination is a very powerful tool. Vincent always seemed to instinctively know what needed to be said or written to encourage, guide or nurture. Leaders who are empathetic have earned confidence from others by understanding what situation is faced. When we empathise with people, it enables them to feel accepted rather than rejected. It does not mean that we always have to accept resulting behaviours, but it does require acceptance of imperfect people. Who here is not imperfect themselves? Greenleaf believed that the typical person, immature, stumbling, inept, lazy, is capable of great dedication and heroism if wisely led. What is empathy for Greenleaf is compassion for Vincent, a characteristic that guided and informed his life. He said, "Compassion means to suffer with our brothers and sisters, to weep when they weep, quite different from those who feel no sorrow for the afflicted or grief for the sufferings of the poor. Compassion is a manifestation of love which enables us to enter into another's heart and feelings." For me, this idea of compassion and how we treat one another is incredibly important. It's equally important to apply our vision and values to the people we work alongside as well as the people we work for. In other words, as a leader of a charity which supports and delivers services to homeless people, I want to know that people are showing compassion to those we support. In order to achieve this, I think it's imperative that we create a culture where this approach is taken with our employees and volunteers. But remember what I said, it's not always about accepting resulting behaviour, it's about accepting individual people, faults and all. Applying fairness in how we deal with people is important. People can be broken at times and they do need a chance to mend. I often talk to our staff and funders about how we treat the people we work with in our services. Is it what we would want for the people we love, for our father, our brother, our sister, our mother, our friend, or indeed ourselves? I think we need to apply this to those we employ. So empathy and acceptance are important. Behaviours need to be addressed, but people need to be treated with dignity, respect, and fairness. This is a balance that's hard to strike, and which is why I feel that this characteristic might be natural as opposed to learned. But even if natural, it's not to say that the right approach will be taken on every occasion. It's something that should be nurtured and developed. Okay, conceptualisation then. This is another characteristic that Greenleaf tells us that leaders need two intellectual abilities, not usually assessed in an academic way. They need to sense they need to have a sense for the unknowable and they need to foresee the unforeseeable, so no pressure. Greenleaf reminds us that the art of leadership is to bridge the information gap with intuition. Leaders must be more creative than most. Creativity is largely discovery, a push into the uncharted and the unknown. Intuition, on the other hand, is a feel for patterns, the ability to generalise based on what has happened previously. Leaders act on hunches, but calculated one. Vincent was incredibly practical in all he did. He learned by doing, he was results-orientated, and he was, as a result, an effective change agent. I think we must try to nurture an environment where others are encouraged to conceptualise or be creative. And around 2 years ago, I was asked to speak at a conference in Northern Ireland about working with active drug users. And I started trying to think about how, because it was people were like previously in Dublin, people were resistant to working with active drug users in Northern Ireland. And I was trying to think, how am I going to get people to shift off the mark here? So I was thinking about whenever, you know, we started working with people in Dublin, and I started thinking about when our chief executive had said to put that other service out to tender. And I had started thinking about, if I was a service provider then and somebody had asked me about going for that project, I think I probably would have asked the question, well, why not? And whenever you ask the question, why not, I suppose you open yourself up to really looking at all of the opportunities. And you, generally speaking, can find ways around things. You, generally speaking, will identify the areas that you need to address. And you, generally speaking, will really understand if you have to say no, why you have to say no. So when I came back to work, one of my senior managers said to me, oh, I think we should take the thing, why not, now for senior management team for the rest of the year. So that we did. And then we had our staff conference. And again, why not was the theme of the staff conference. So every time I went anywhere, people were saying to me, why not, Kerry? And so now we have a 5-year strategic plan entitled Why Not? And the reason being was that we wanted to create an environment that encourages questioning, finding creative solutions, and challenging the state of quo if it's in the best interest of our service users. So yes, you need as a leader to be able to conceptualise, but you also need to allow others to do this. You need to open up their creativity to think big and find better, innovative and more positive ways to impact the lives that the people we are here to serve. I'll just keep an eye on time here. According to Alison, Vincent was mistrustful of over-conceptualisation. He felt that if you conceptualise, you can confuse yourself and you could turn the heat off in terms of action. And he was very, very much a doer. He was, also, of course, also very clever, and he was well able to theorise. He always hopes for something more for people, but he doesn't overanalyse, even in spiritual matters. However, a big fear of the 17th century would have been that people could over-conceptualise and this would lead to heresy. Some might say that it did. Vincent was creative and he had new ideas, but he only challenged the status quo to a certain extent, and it was always within acceptable parameters, whether this was within the church or within the wider system. Perhaps this is where the gift of foresight came for Vincent. He intuitively knew how far he could go. Greenleaf said, as leaders, we need to be able to fill the gaps for others based on intuition. Intuition or gut responses for me have always been incredibly important. And when I was a student social worker, my practice teacher tortured the living daylights out of me to get me to keep a reflective log, you know. And she was always asking me, why did you do that? And I would say, oh, well, I felt like the right thing to do. And she was always wanting me to apply theory to it. And I was just going, oh, it's just what you do. And I think it's really important what she did in terms of helping me to theorise why we were doing what we were doing. But also for me, intuition and practising in an intuitive way is really important. And it's probably back to that idea of calling and what you can't teach. I, like Vincent, wanted more for those that we are here to serve. And I would encourage people to conceptualise, to dream big dreams, but also then we need to apply our intuition and our foresight, and if we are to continue to ensure that we are operating within realistic parameters. St. Louise was a successful leader, but she was also a realist. And who knows, perhaps it was actually her who kept Vincent's feet in the ground from time to time. So just coming on to the idea then of foresight. Servant leaders apparently have an uncanny ability to anticipate future events. They are adept at picking up patterns in the environment and seeing what the future brings. They usually anticipate consequences of decision with great accuracy. Vincent saw that foresight came from providence, waiting to see what was God's divine plan, and he saw humans simply as instruments of this. Greenleaf, on the other hand, talks about the prudent leader living by rhythm, which encourages a high level of intuitive insight about the gamut of events from the indefinite past through the present moment to the indefinite future. He would suggest in order to achieve this, we need to live at two levels of consciousness. One, in the real world, concerned with responsible, effective, and, val- and, effectiveness and value orientated. At the same time, we need to live detached, riding above real worlds, seeing ourselves deeply involved in events and seeing the perspective of a long-term sweep of history that's projected into the indefinite future. So again, no pressure. Vincent and Greenleaf were experts at this themselves. There's a saying that history repeats itself, and this is largely true, but there is a need for us as servants, as leaders, to look to the past in whatever we do and use it to affect what we do in the current day. Foresight, in many ways, in my opinion, is a need to balance prudence and risk, and this may be one of the contradictions in leadership. The prudent person is one who constantly thinks of the now as the moving concept in which past, present, moment and future are one organic unity, but they will still have to make decisions and take calculated risks. Greenleaf says that the modern leader needs to be on a daily basis historian, contemporary analyst and prophet, and must not see these as separate roles. He sees foresight as critical and says it is the lead that the leader has. Once leaders lose this event and events start to force their hand, they are leaders in name only. Similar to Vincent's notion of providence, Greenleaf feels that living with foresight is partly a matter of faith. Stress is a condition of most modern life, and if one is servant leader and carrying the burdens of others, going out ahead to show the way, one must take the rough and tumble. One takes the belief that one enters a situation prepared with the necessary experience and knowledgeable at the conscious level. This way of leading, in my mind, is a crucial skill. And if we want to be servant leader who operates from a place of trust, we must have this characteristic if others are to feel confident to place their trust within us. Awareness is another crucial skill for a servant leader. Greenleaf talks of opening wide the doors of perception, so to enable the servant leader to get more of what is available of sensory experience and other signals from the environment than other people usually would. For Greenleaf, awareness is not a giver of solace, it's a disturber and an awakener. Able leaders are usually sharply awake and reasonably disturbed. I can vouch for that. They do not seek after solace, they have inner serenity. I can't vouch for that. At the moment, I'm trying to bring around a piece in Dublin around, bring this idea of foresight and awareness into a piece of work that we're doing in Dublin. And just without going into the details of the events, when I look at the past situation in Dublin around homelessness, which I've outlined a little bit off, and I hear what's talked about in terms of language, particularly in the recessionary time, I start to feel a little bit nervous. So now I'm trying to be a bit of a disturber and an awakener for others to join with me to look at past experiences, consider a current environment and put down markers about what is and isn't acceptable into the future. And how would we do this? I suppose we'd lobby, we'd write articles, we continue to collaborate with others, we negotiate, and most importantly for me, we continue in our servant leader commitment. One of the central themes of this type of leadership is to take a person-centred approach. We keep our focus on the people that we are there to serve, in this case homeless people, but also our employees. But we do need to be courageous. If we have the gift and skill of foresight, we must make ourselves acutely aware, and then we must have the courage to act, to be an awakener and a disturber. We must maintain focus on who we are there to serve. There is little doubt in my mind that the ability to reasonably predict the future is essential in the leadership role, and it can indeed be the thing that will make a leader fall. And in our case, that would have a negative impact on our service users. So we must feel the weight of our moral and ethical authority in our role, but we must also ensure that we remember Vincent's caution about adopting humility in our approach. Persuasiveness then. James Autry talks about the importance of being authentic as a servant leader. He says being authentic is first knowing yourself, then being yourself, and that authenticity derives from our deepest, truest selves. He talks about holding to the same values in whatever role you have. Always be your real self. I think this is incredibly important. We all know that any leadership role, and in any leadership role, people are always observing you. People know when we're faking and bluffing. It's my sense that we get much more from people and we get much further with people if we are honest with them and consistent. One of the great challenges of leadership is the ability to persuade others. If we draw on the other characteristics that we've talked about, we should be able to tell stories, set the scene, present reasoned and convincing arguments for people. Of course, if we are truly leading as servant, we will do all this because we want to seek to convince people rather than rely on formal authority. There are many ways we can see this gift developed in others. Some people have the ability to stand up in front of thousands, and they are great orators and incredibly charismatic. I only need to say the phrase, yes, we can. And we can see Barack Obama convincing a nation of the need for, through conceptualization, telling them what could be achieved, encouraging people to dream big dreams. And yes, speeches and powerful emotive stories can convince people and persuade people, but servant leaders also recognize the value in working one-to-one with people to persuade them. This is not less valuable. Vincent was an expert in writing letters of persuasion to people, but he also used others to do this too. He knew he was building something bigger than him. We need to persuade people, we need to share our vision, and we need to encourage them to do this also. Stewardship then. Servant leaders are often characterized as having a strong sense of stewardship. This concept stems from medieval times when any new prince was assigned a steward to help prepare him for his reign. Vincent saw himself as a steward in his leadership role, and he saw a large part of this as being protector. As I said, Vincent knew he was building something really important, and it was something that he hoped would last long after he was gone. And I think it's a testament to him and his attitude like this that I'm standing in front of you today, still drawing on the work of Vincent and Louise some 400 years ago. When I took on the role of chief executive of DePaul Ireland, I knew that I was working for an organisation that was special. It had grabbed me about 8 years previously, and there was little I could do. And yes, I do have stewardship with regards to our legal obligations, ensuring we continue to be financially sustainable, that we are continuing to develop our quality assurance systems, and that our staff and service users are well looked after and nurtured. But there's a higher sense of stewardship as well. There's firstly the overall commitment to the organisation and our vision, mission and values, which I think in my role as steward, I'm here not only to promote, but importantly to protect. At a recent meeting of our international work, we were talking about the biggest challenges facing us into the next phase. And you can imagine every country had money at the top of their list. And for me, money is obviously always a challenge in the voluntary sector, but it always will be. The biggest challenge for me in recessionary times, when development of organisations will rely on mergers, acquisitions, takeovers, how do we protect the vision, mission and values and the culture of organisations, which I feel are important to me and other people, it's important to them. The next area that I think I feel a strong sense of stewardship is in my relationship to homeless people generally, not just those who access DePaul Ireland services. I would say to be a true servant leader, we must have a sense of stewardship that has a wider impact. We and our organisation are only a small part of the overall work. As servant leaders, we must be committed to making a difference and an impact on anyone who comes to us for help or indeed on the wider system. For me, the higher sense of stewardship is around a commitment to social justice and making a positive impact in society. If we are truly authentic, our servant leadership approach is it only applicable in the workplace? And I know this is challenging. It's certainly challenging for me, but I think at least we need to consider if we are being authentic and we are applying values all of the time, are we different in work than we are elsewhere? I believe this, like calling, is not something we can teach, and it is something that we either do or do not possess. But I definitely believe it's something we can ignore. So growth in people then. Servant leaders have a commitment to the growth of people. Vincent recruited ordinary people and asked them to do extraordinary service. He hired for fit young country girls to offer direct service to the poor as the Daughters of Charity, and wealthy society women as the Ladies of Charity to raise money. He sent Vincentian priests throughout Europe and abroad to serve the poor, even before they were ready for the task. He gave high potential people more opportunities, put them in jobs before they were ready, but he did not abandon them. Rather, he managed from afar through 30,000 detailed letters, creating a sense of belonging and a sense of culture. One of the core values of DePaul Ireland today is that we believe in the potential of people. And I think this is a modern day extension of what Vincent was saying and doing. This is not a value that is only applied to our service users. It's applied to the full spectrum of stakeholders. And actually, it's something that I would say that I've benefited from myself. A little over 3 years ago, our previous chief executive had moved on, and the group chief executive had approached me and asked me would I step up into the acting role for a period of time. And I was 32 years old at the time. Now I've given away my age. I was 32 years old at the time and only had about 2 years senior management experience. I was completing my master's in voluntary sector management at the time. So in reality, I probably didn't have the experience that was needed for the job. But Mark, our group chief executive, said to me, Kerry, sometimes in life there's a wave comes along and you either jump on or you hang around for ages waiting for the next one to come along. So jump on I did. I'm not embarrassed to tell you that behind the scenes, I know Mark had work to do in convincing other people that I had the potential to do this job. And I acted in the role for 8 months, and I have to say, I think it was the longest interview ever. And then I went through the recruitment process and was obviously successful in getting the job. But what I want to say is I know that Mark took a risk on me. I know that he believed in my potential. He'd probably say he had the foresight to know it would be okay. But it was a big, big learning curve for me with some very serious issues coming up throughout the year. But I did love it. I also learned something in that approach with me about how I now approach other people. We need to take chances on people. We need to push them. We need to allow people to do more than just their job description if they want to. We need to enable people to become servant leaders themselves. Those who want to be great servant leaders need to connect to others' developmental needs and actively find ways to meet these. Vincent had great concern for the growth of others, and he was risk-taking in this regard, as I've outlined, but sometimes it paid off and sometimes it didn't. So development is also about allowing people to grow and learn from mistakes. Vincent was a great believer in forgiveness with discipline. When someone wrote to Vincent with a particular issue about a priest in his house who he was finding it very difficult to lead and didn't know what to do about, Vincent wrote back in Vincent's usual style, a very caring style, and he said, in the first instant, you need to have a quiet word. If it continues, you need to have a stricter word. And on the third occasion, if you need to speak to him, then it must be much more serious. Vincent always believed that any discipline should be accompanied by some form of constructive advice. Not to just forgive, but you should be constructive and allow for growth. Vincent wasn't a doormat to humility. He believed that you can still help people, but you can do it in a humble way. Vincent felt that true vanity was to chastise someone and not help them in some constructive way. Robert Greenleaf said that the servant leader always accepts and empathises, always accepts a person, but sometimes refuses to accept some of the person's effort or performance as good enough. As servant leaders, we need to want to foster the success of others. How we do this is a fine balance of taking risks and providing opportunities, but giving honest and direct feedback in a way that still respects and values the dignity of the individual. The final area I want to talk about is building community. And a question we have to ask ourselves is, do people feel that they have a strong sense of community in the organisation or team we are leading? Servant leaders have a strong sense of community spirit and work hard to foster this. For Vincent, building community was crucial, even at a distance. Part of his writing was about encouraging others to feel part of something bigger and ensuring people knew that they were working for a common purpose. I think the starting point for ensuring this sense of ownership is going back to the vision, mission and values of an organisation. In my opinion, leadership and values are interdependent as if two sides of the one coin. Leaders need to be able to articulate a story, a vision, a purpose, and a goal. They need to work with others to create a set of values that will build community. I have in the past described values as a glue that holds a diverse organisation together. The story of Vincent and Louise today for me is told in Ireland, not in DePaul, Ireland, not from a religious perspective as such, as told to, as a way to inspire, to say that even though people aren't doing something doesn't mean that we can't. Dream big dreams in the service of the poor. At DePaul, we're incredibly lucky to have strong vision, mission and value statements, and we've invested a great time and energy in instilling these in the organisation and creating champions of the values. One example of this would be a course that we run through DePaul International where we would take six of our employees of all different levels in the organisation, along with six of the employees from DePaul UK and now our new countries that are coming on board. And we take them for 2 days to Paris to see, like seeing is believing, take them to see where Vincent and Louise worked. They get a chance to hear from historians about the impact that they made in the society that they were living in the time. When we come back, then we have a follow-up course, either in England or Ireland, which is a leadership really course. And we look at leader as visionary, leader as catalyst, leader as mentor, and of course, leader as servant. It does sound like we're trying to create a cult. But it seems to me that if people come to work with us, they will understand through our literature very well who we are and what we do. Our values are explicit. And then it is imperative and it's incumbent on us that we build on this. We build on the reason why people were attracted to DePaul. We do this in order to create a culture where the vision, mission and values are used to underpin all of our work. I think the key principle of any form of leadership and particular leadership, servant leadership is to think about the culture in which you are working. When we think of leading in this way, we do need to think about personal attributes, the personal attributes we have or indeed do not have and need to develop. We also need to think about our wider setting. How can we create an environment through the use of ourselves and other resources to create a culture which nurtures and encourages the idea of servant leader? It is imperative that we try to build an environment of ownership. I think communication is incredibly important in this, talking in the we and us rather than the I and me, encouraging open and honest feedback and acting on it, introducing processes where you thank people and celebrate success. Vincent and Louise were incredibly successful in building a sense of community in a time where there was no modern technology. What excuse do we have today? So, in conclusion, I've just touched on what is a very big topic to cover, and I've tried to give you a flavour of some of the characteristics that I would consider important in servant leadership, and I would reiterate the point that I am not the model example of a servant leader in any shape or form, and what I'm saying to you today, I'm equally saying to myself. Vincent realised that others accomplish things when leaders serve them by searching, listening, and expecting better solutions. And I just want to finish off by saying 6 points that James Autry says about leadership. Leadership is not about controlling people. It's about caring about people and being a useful resource to them. Leadership is not about being the boss. It's about being present for people and building a community at work. Leadership is not about holding on to territory. It's about letting go of the ego, bringing your spirit to work, being your best and most authentic self. Leadership is less concerned with pep talks and more concerned with creating a place in which people can do good work, can find meaning in their work, and can bring their spirits, their most authentic self, to work. Leadership is largely about paying attention, and leadership requires love. It seems only fitting that I end this with a word from Vincent. The liberty and the dignity of the person helped must be respected with the greatest sensitivity. The aid contributed should be organised in such a way that the beneficiaries are gradually freed from their dependence on others and gradually become self-supporting. For me, that's the essence of servant leadership. Thank you. We've got about 10 minutes because I'm from Ireland and I talk fast. I hope people who aren't from Ireland follow that. But if people want to ask questions, I'm happy, not necessarily able to answer them.
I'll start and just embarrass Kerry because I do know her. I'm not very involved in the work of the organisation. But I think when you come along to things like this, you can listen to someone talk, but you don't actually know how they live that out in their real life. But having been to a few events that the organisation does, to see Kerry gets on exactly the same with one of her service users as she does with the Archbishop or whatever it is, and she really does live out the stuff she's talking about valuing every individual. Now that's done. Thanks. Really what I wanted to ask you to talk a wee bit more about is, you talked about some of these qualities are innate qualities.
Yeah.
But in terms of the other qualities, I suppose maybe just from your experience, ways of sharing how you get people to buy in or develop these other qualities in people within your organisation, what you think works for that?
I think possibly I was talking to people recently about this, and possibly the idea of that why not that I was talking about as well. For me, it's about creating a culture that allows people to try new things and to not be scared to try new things. And, you know, we all make mistakes and to learn from mistakes. I mean, we've got all of the normal traditional practices that you would expect from other organisations in place in terms of our training and our support systems and all of the rest of it. But there's something for me which is always about coming back to the vision, mission and values and to talk about, I mean, they're talked about very, very proactively. I was pleased when I went out recently to meet with each of our projects. We're doing a massive reconfiguration of the homeless services in Dublin, not ours, the sector. Ours as part of that. And we went out to talk about how people were feeling about this. And the two questions that I was asked was, first and foremost, what about my job, which you would expect? And the second one was, what's going to happen about our culture, our vision, our mission, our values? Because people had bought into that. They'd realised that that was what was important and different about the organisation. So I don't know if I'm really answering your question, other than to say that I think that you have to work really, really hard to give people freedom to grow and make sure that systems and structures are in place. But other than that, create a culture where every single person, no matter what they're doing, feels that they're valued and they've got the opportunity to make a difference in the organisation, wider organisation, rather than just maybe on a one-to-one basis with the clients, which is, you know, the critical part. So am I okay? Oh, no. You've got to be quick with me. I'm impatient, you see.
I just want to say thank you because that's really inspiring. And
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think, like, funny, I was talking to somebody the other night about this, who used to be our senior one of our senior managers, and she's left the organisation, and I was staying with her in Manchester on the way coming over here, and she said to me, do you remember 3 years ago, Carrie, you were a fierce control freak? And she said, you needed to be, because the organisation was in such a place that we needed to get things in order to be able. And servant leadership for me isn't, it's not like almost about a point in time, it's ongoing, you know, and I think... It's a really good question. It's a really tough question. And I think I find it difficult because I've been given so much scope by our group chief executive to so much freedom, really, you know, I know he's there, but I'm given so much scope and freedom. I think that management isn't always about managing down. It's sometimes about managing up as well. And maybe leading's a little bit like that as well. So in terms of being really, you know what I was saying about that idea of being authentic, being your true self, but also being courageous to say stuff as well. So I think that there's something for me that people often talk about, oh, my manager's this, that, and the other thing, I have to manage up. But I think maybe leadership's a little bit like that as well, and it's probably something that's just chipping away and gradually trying to introduce some of these concepts and showing through your practice in terms of how you engage with your colleagues and indeed with a manager or in the way that you engage with your service users as well. I think that that's really important, just trying to apply, because we're very, very good at applying principles to the clients that we're there to work for, but it's really, really remiss of us not to apply the same principles to our colleagues. So we would be forgiving of a lot of stuff around our service users. That's actually patronising in a way if we're not taking a similar attitude to the other people around us. So I suppose I would just encourage you to try to be your most authentic self if you can, and apply that to the person who's above you, as well as the person who's beside you, as well as the person who's below you.
One of the characteristics you talked about was about leaders having foresight, being prophets almost, which I can understand. But could you just explain how that relates to the idea of being a servant leader? Because I couldn't quite see the connection.
I suppose the thing for me about the force, I think this stuff as well about servant leader, if you remember what I was saying before as well, is that not everybody has the ability. Let me just think about this now. Do you remember what I said earlier on about what Greenleaf was saying about people who are born of inspiration, if you like, and people who are born to naturally lead? There's something for me around if you're a servant leader and you're working with people around you and you're serving them, basically, but you're also asking them, because you're still a leader, you can't ignore the fact that you've got a leadership role, you're still asking them to come with you on the basis of trust. I think you need to convince people around you, sort of like ask the idea of servant and the idea of leadership. You need to ask people to come with you, but you need to show and demonstrate that you have got the ability for them to trust you. So I think it's probably more an idea of a leadership, but coupled with the other pieces that I was talking about. So if you couple the idea of conceptualization and foresight along with the idea of awareness, then that's for me, it's whenever you put the three together that you get more of the servant leadership. So the awareness piece is about, as I was saying, and also the empathy, I suppose, as well, as I'm saying, that if you put yourself in somebody else's shoes and you're able to understand, even though you might be able to be up here viewing the world, you know, from your helicopter perspective, a lot of other people on the ground won't be able to. So you might have the foresight, but how you engage and communicate that with others in terms of being a servant and how you're talking to them and bringing them with you. So let me think. It's the power thing as well, right? So I know at the minute that there's difficulties ahead for us in Dublin. I know that I could take that power stance that a leader can take, where I can say, I know this information, but I don't feel that people should know this yet because it's only going to create panic. Or I could say, I have got the foresight. People are following me. People are leading, or letting me, you know, allowing me to lead the way on this. And I can go out and I can share it with them. And then I can try to really, really understand their position. So there's something about the foresight, giving people an understanding of the view as well, and then doing that in a way that cares for them and takes on board that idea of empathy and awareness around how people might feel in that position. So it's hard to, it's a good question, but I think that foresight's a real leadership quality. But if you couple that with all of the other characteristics that we were talking about, it helps you to be the ultimate servant leader, perhaps. If you come up with a better answer, let me know, because I might use this again, you know.
Your response there strikes me as an extremely risky way of leading, to be so transparent. And yet, as someone who works in the education sector and is often not really told anything about anything that's going on, I find that really refreshing and actually very empowering for the employee and the service user. So, just a comment.
Yeah, I mean, I think all I can do is think about my own experience. And, you know, I remember working in organisations where you didn't know who the chief executive was, you didn't know who the senior managers were. Like, somebody said to me the other day about they'd gone for an interview and they came for feedback. And we had said to them, you know, you didn't really talk about how you would engage with the senior management team and try to influence the chief executive. And they said, well, because in the organisation I work with at the moment, I'd be told that's none of my business. And I was a bit like, really? You know, because, you know, you want to... And it's not, it's hard because you know, I really am worried sometimes about giving people too much information and leaving them in a really anxious place, which is the risk as well. But I think if, you know, people are adults, and if we don't treat people like adults and, you know, and say, look, here's the reality, it is tough. This is what I'm doing on your behalf. Is there anything else you want me to be doing on your behalf? You know, and I'm just trying to put it in. I'm sure I don't always get it right now, I have to say. And there's probably people sitting in our organisation very anxious about stuff at the minute. But I think it's a better way to treat people as in a mature way and ask them then to behave and engage in a mature way back. And that's where the struggle comes sometimes when people don't take it in that way. Hi, sorry.
Hello. I assume, though, maybe I shouldn't, you do know the Open Door community in Atlanta?
I don't, actually.
Homelessness organisation that sprang out of the Catholic worker movement?
No, I don't. Where are they based?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, right. No, sorry, I don't.
Right. I just wondered if you knew them, the answer's no, whether, as well as all the principles you've enunciated, it would be helpful to look at practices and indeed their principles and the way they operate.
Okay.
They are in the centre of town, and they do take people into their premises, and they also publish a very radical magazine called Hospitality.
Okay.
And they do have very extensive talks on the application of the gospel to this whole area that you work in. I found them rather inspiring, though I may have some reservations, but that's...
Yeah.
You know, every organisation has its lips.
None of us are perfect.
That's right. But it's just with you talking about awareness.
Yeah.
And sometimes in business, it pays to look at just what other people are doing in the same area. And that can have the effect of strengthening your convictions about the way you're doing it, as well as asking questions.
Absolutely. Can you just remind me the name again?
The Open Door Community.
Okay, thank you.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah,
it describes
should be easy to remember,
it.
Yeah.
I can give you some details afterwards
you.
If you're genuinely interested.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for this talk. I'm very much a newcomer to the idea of servant leadership, and I thought it was really great to hear kind of what for me was an introduction to the idea.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, I mean, I graduate next year and I want to get into jobs that obviously a lot of the core values is servant leadership. And I was wondering, do I get a book? Do I go on a course? What's the best way for me to find out more?
About servant leadership or organisations who work in that way?
About the servant leadership as a style of...
You could probably contact, there's a Greenleaf, who I've been talking a lot about. There's a Greenleaf Centre in the United States, and they've a good website. There's a lot of information online, and you could probably find out a lot more information of them. I think you can become members of their network. You know, they use a lot of they do a lot of networking as well as conferences and things like that. So that'd probably be a good place to start, I would say. And then I think in terms of choosing places to work, I would really encourage people to examine an organisation's values, but also maybe ask to visit before you go to work, you know, before you go. I think really people can say an awful lot on paper, and actually it's only when you see it, you can really see if it's actually, being translated into practice.
Thank you.
No worries.
It was just an observation, really, working in the NHS, that the kind of management that you're talking about just seems, it's so far from what's going on at the moment. And I think there's so many people who work in NHS and like more in education who want to work in an authentic way, but almost if you put that forward, that's not pragmatic, that's not, because everything is, the culture is so, is changing fast, and it's so money orientated that it's you almost, if you put that forward, you're almost seen as soft in the head and, you know, too idealistic. It's a bit of a depressing situation, I think, at the moment.
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that, because I was having a I need to be careful what I say because it's been recorded, but I was having a conversation with some colleagues recently in the sector, and I was very, very concerned. You know that thing I was saying about the awakener and disturber, and I was talking about that. I was very concerned about what was going on, and I said to the lads, am I going mad? Like, am I more concerned about this than you? And they said, well, your organisation's got exposure in relation to blah, blah, blah. I said, no, not about my organisation, about the sector in general. I mean, we're saying we're going to try to achieve something, and I can't see how we're going to achieve that. You know, why is nobody else speaking out? So there's something for me as well around that piece of the disturber and the awakener that I was talking about, but also taking as Vincent has always talks about, humility, and I'm not 100% convinced I'm very good at that, but apply. I think it's incumbent on us to point out areas of concern, and like, you know, the voluntary sector is the same as the public sector at the moment in terms of money. You know, like, we're looking into huge cuts really coming down the road this year, next year, but for me, the commitment to the service users and the commitment to our staff needs to remain the same in how I engage with them. And I feel the weight of the responsibility of being in my role, for sure. But there's something around optimism, I think. Or I don't know. I think I am fairly naturally optimistic. But and again, what I was saying to you earlier about, you know, there's something around how you are in your workplace as well. Because we're all can be servant leaders, you know what I mean? We can all be leaders. You don't have to be in a chief executive role to be a leader, obviously. You know, I know that's stating the obvious, but we really need to think about that and feel that responsibility as well, you know. But I do appreciate the fact that it's incredibly depressing out there at the minute. Well, one of the lads said to me, oh, Kerry, sure, it's just lethargy all over the place. And I was saying, well, you can't be lethargic if you're going to be a chief executive. You know, so there's something around trying not to let the lethargy stop us doing what we could do.
I was really, really moved by what you said. And it is a really depressing time. I just thought I'd love to challenge you, and it's probably impossible, but I would so love for you to sit down with Cameron and Clegg and have a chat with them about this philosophy, because it's so much at the heart of what can drive and exacerbate poverty in our environment, in our country. Yeah. And if they don't grasp a little bit of what you've been talking about, then I think the plans that they have could be utterly devastating, and I think are unnecessary. And politicians in the past, some of them have grasped this concept of servant leadership.
Mm.
And it would make such a difference, I think, the public's concept of politics, if politicians could re-engage with the idea of servant leadership. Mm. And, you know, the whole way our economy works and the way that the banking system works, that's been driving and leading the way our economy functions as a capitalist model. And, you know, this, if people could turn around attitudes to re-engage and recapture that concept,
yeah,
then, God, the world would be so much better a place. So if there were any way you could grab their ear, please do it.
Do you know we've got a shower for them in Northern Ireland? No, I'd happily talk to anybody. Obviously, you can tell I'm not short of words. but no, I agree. I mean, I think that we really, as I said to you, like, what I'm saying today is as much a challenge to myself as it is to anybody else. And I'm sure there's many people in our organisation would have a few choice things to say about me. I'm not setting myself up as perfect in this at all. But I think that you're right. I think it is incumbent on us, if we're in a leadership role, to really, really think about how we're doing that. And this was really good for me, writing this talk, because it made me reflect on what I'm doing, you know. And as I said, there's certainly areas that I need to work on myself. But yeah, I'd take up the challenge to chat to anybody about it.
We've just about come to the end of the time now, so thank you again for coming to Bethlehem.
Yeah,
can I ask
very
you one
much
more time to show your appreciation?
Thank you. Thanks very much.